Hello, I'm Laura Castleton, U.S. Head of Portfolio Construction and Strategy at Janus Henderson Investors. For 90 years, we've worked to help clients achieve superior financial outcomes and fulfill our purpose of investing in a brighter future together. To learn more, go to janushenderson.com.
A new look at the world economy and the Delta variant.
It won't derail it. I mean, that's the feeling that economists have. It will likely slow it down a little.
Plus, as the Fed wraps up a meeting, markets await any word on possible changes and how overtime is affecting the labor shortage. It's Wednesday, September 22nd. I'm Mark Stewart with the Wall Street Journal. Here's the AM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories moving your world today. The House passed a measure Tuesday keeping the government funded until early December and suspending its borrowing limit through 2022. The government's funding is currently set to expire on October 1st. The Senate could vote on the measure later this week or early next, that's according to aides. The White House said in a statement Tuesday night it supported the bill. We're getting a better idea of Amazon's planned department stores, which could open next year. It will aim to boost its apparel sales by offering shoppers a chance to try on clothes from its own private label brands in technology-fueled dressing rooms. This is according to people familiar with the matter. We're told the stores will primarily function as a place for Amazon to sell clothes and other items from its own label and outside brands. The first department stores are slated to open near San Francisco and Columbus, Ohio. And Uber has said it's within reach of posting its first adjusted quarterly profit in the company's history. A securities filing reveals Uber said it's projecting adjusted results between a loss of $25 million and a profit of $25 million for the quarter that ends September 30th. Uber also said it expects to post an adjusted profit in this year's fourth quarter. The Federal Reserve is set to wrap up its two-day meeting today. Chairman Jerome Powell could use the gathering to signal they are likely to start the process of scaling back their easy money policies. For more on the Fed and its thinking, I'm joined by markets reporter Will Horner in London. Will, eventually the Fed has said it will curtail its bond purchases and raise interest rates. Where do things stand?
So the Fed is meeting today, and undoubtedly these topics are going to be discussed. On the question of bond buying, Fed Chairman Jerome Powell is seen as unlikely to announce anything concrete today, but he could use the opportunity to announce that the process will begin at the Fed's next meeting in early November. Another outcome of the meeting that's going to be closely watched is the Fed's dot plots. These are a sort of collection of Fed officials' individual expectations for the path of interest rates. And again, these could also show that officials are bringing forward their expectations of when the first rate hike might take place.
Well, as far as those projections, what's Chairman Powell's approach?
So something Powell has been very keen to do is separate his plans for the tapering of bond buying from rate hikes. He doesn't want the public and people in the market to conflate the two. His message today could be somewhat undermined by the dot plots if at the meeting, we see that officials are bringing forward their rate hike expectations to coincide with their plans for bond purchases. Powell has downplayed the significance of the dot plots. In his words, he has stressed that the dot plots need to be taken with a very big grain of salt.
Much to watch today. Will Horner, thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Mark.
Just ahead, a global look at the Delta variant and the impact on the economic recovery after the break.
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
We'll be getting a lot of fresh economic data in the days ahead. Later today, we'll learn how existing home sales in the U.S. fared during the month of August. On Thursday, we'll look at surveys of purchasing managers from a number of large economies. All of this comes as a new report is released looking at the role the COVID-19 Delta variant is playing in the global economy. WSJ reporter Paul Hannon has looked at the data and how it relates to business and our lives, and he joins me from London. Hi, Paul. Glad you're here.
It's great to be with you again, Mark.
Paul, this is a study from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development based in Paris. What is the feeling worldwide? Will the Delta variant derail some of the recent economic gains?
It won't derail it. I mean, that's the feeling that economists have. It will likely slow it down a little. So obviously, this has been a very difficult time for people like economists to produce forecasts. They have to kind of basically guess what's going to happen with something that they have never worked with before, a fast-moving pandemic. So at the start of the year, they were kind of fairly pessimistic about growth this year. Then they got very optimistic about growth, partly because the US was doing really well when vaccination started. And now they're getting a little bit less, you know, optimistic. They've just lowered their forecasts for growth this year a little bit, but it will still be, you know, for the US, for the world, one of the best years in recent decades.
This is a story where we have seen regional differences. Based off of this report, which parts of the world are struggling the most?
I think right now you're looking at Asia, basically, East Asia in particular, where this new Delta variant has been free to spread through a mostly unvaccinated population. And what's happened there is that, you know, the governments have had to go back to you know, very early days in the playbook and close things down. And that's led to a sort of bit of an economic wobble, which has had knock-on effects all around the world. I mean, this is a place where, you know, factories make a lot of the stuff that we buy and parts for a lot of the things that people make in the US or Europe. So that's the place, I think, that's mostly the focus for concern and worry right now.
As far as regions, Paul, that are seeing success, where are we looking at now?
I mean, this changes a lot as the pandemic sort of develops. But I'd say over the last few months, the place that's been most surprising is Europe, you know, which did not have a good 2020 and was even in recession at the turn of the year. But its vaccination program has turned out to be much more rapid than people had expected. And therefore, the summer was much better for Europe than the OECD, for example, had anticipated. So at the same time as the OECD was cutting its forecast for the world and the US, it was raising its forecast for Europe. But, you know, one thing about this pandemic that's become very, very clear is that you're on dangerous ground if you project forward on the basis of what just happened, because going back to Asia was in great shape in, you know, towards the end of last year. It's tricky to make too many sort of firm projections about next year at this stage.
Paul, in your recent reporting, you focused on one company in particular, Brompton Bicycle. Tell us about the company and what its experience says about the current state of the economy.
Brompton Bicycles is based in West London, and they make a bicycle that folds up into something that's a bit bigger than a backpack, which means that you can take it on trains or take it into the office and just plonk it by your desk. Bicycles are one of those kind of pandemic goods that saw a real surge in demand. I mean, here and in other cities, people were looking for an alternative to, you know, the subway, the bus or whatever. Brompton Bicycles, the frustration for them, and I'm sure for a whole bunch of other manufacturers, is they just cannot get their hands on the parts that they need to make bicycles as quickly as people want them. And this goes back to our conversation about Asia. A lot of their parts come from that part of the world. So for them, it's sort of like, in a way, the best of times, but also it's really frustrating because they know that they could be doing a lot more.
Finally, Paul, this is a difficult time for economists to try and take a look at the future, but what are they saying as far as the forecast, at least into the next year, is concerned?
Well, what they're saying is that the outlook is still pretty good. In fact, the guys at the OECD raised their forecast for next year, which tells you that they think that, you know, some of the output that hasn't taken place because of Delta hasn't like entirely been lost. It's been postponed a bit delayed. But, you know, what they're working on is the idea that vaccination programs are going to be much more advanced in Asia and other parts of the world during next year, and that that's going to help tamp down on the virus, but also help people kind of deal with it in their everyday lives, you know, better. They'll be less scared of getting very seriously ill or worse. What they can't really reckon with is, you know, another mutation in the virus that changes the game again. And they're not pretending that they know exactly what's going to happen on that front. So it's sort of cautiously optimistic in the sense that, you know, if the vaccines continue to do the job, things should get better. If the virus decides to come up with a brand new set of tricks, then who knows?
Paul Hannon joining me from London. Paul, always a pleasure. Thank you.
Likewise, Mark.
And finally, we've talked about labor shortages across the country. Companies have had to rely on overtime when they can't fill positions. But what happens when you're working overtime all the time? Here's WSJ Workplace reporter Lauren Weber.
Employers are relying on the existing workers, and then the more they rely on those existing workers, the more likely it is that those people will start feeling burnt out, will be exhausted, and that adds to the other pattern we see, which is a lot of people quitting their jobs, and then it becomes a vicious cycle because more people quit their jobs, fewer remaining employees have to make up the difference.
You can hear more from Lauren about the unintended consequences of too much overtime on our sister podcast, Your Money Briefing. And before we go, a quick personal note. This is my last day hosting the podcast. It has been an honor. I've learned something new every day, and I hope you have as well. That's the goal, and it will still be. While new adventures are ahead, a sincere thank you to my colleagues in London, New York, Hong Kong, and around the world. You're the best. And on that note, that's what's news for Wednesday. We'll be back tonight with a new show. I'm Mark Stewart for The Wall Street Journal. Be well, and thanks for listening.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.